Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is a reading from All the President's Men, written by Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein. Woodward phoned Robert F. Bennett, president of the Mullen Public Relations Firm, and asked about Hunt. Bennett, the son of Republican Senator Wallace F. Bennett of Utah, said, "I guess it's no secret that Howard was in the CIA. It had been a secret to Woodward. He called the CIA, where a spokesman said that Hunt had been with the agency from 1949 to 70. Woodward didn't know what to think. Placed another call to his government friend and asked for his advice. His friend sounded nervous. On an off-record basis, he told Woodward that the FBI regarded Hunt as the prime suspect in the Watergate investigation for many reasons, aside from the address book entries and a mail check.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to All the President's Minutes. I'm your host, Blake Howard. Joining me today is... Look, there's several... You might be shocked to learn, but there are several podcasts around the world who talk about movies. I'm now talking to one half of our dynamic duo who invented it, according to their podcast. They do the incredible show Total Reboot, and they also did the absolutely outstanding and phenomenal Finding Drago or Finding Drago podcast.
We mispronounced it on purpose.
On purpose. And I'm so blessed to have been a guest very recently on their show as you're listening to this. Alexi Toliopoulos, welcome to All the President's Minutes.
Blake, thank you so much for having me.
It's like fate.
It's like truly, we just watched my minute and it's like fate to have this one on here.
Hey, stop going behind the curtain, all right? We watched the minute while it plays for people listening.
So sorry, I'm yet to see my minute, but I've been told it is like fate.
No, so as you guys are listening, this is the 18th minute of Alan J. Pakula's 1976 masterpiece, All the President's Men. And we are now in the thick of it, this amazing sequence where Robert Redford, playing Bob Woodward, is going through and grinding through and doing background checks on Howard Hunt and Charles Colson. They're calling Charles Colson's office, calling all these background details, and basically following the leads that he's received from the police of different phone numbers that are in the Watergate burglars' pocketbooks.
Yeah, it's a great sequence. And I'm really glad that this is the direction you decide to go with, like, your new season of the podcast. Because I think that it's, like, this is such, to me, was such an important movie in high school.
Yeah, it's an important movie to me for many, many years.
And it just, and I think that it's one of those movies, like, this is so cool, so cutting edge shit, and so, like, prescient, and so, such a great movie that, weirdly, I feel like has not... It should be more well known and more known as, like, this is one of the great cinematic masterpieces of, like, the new Hollywood era. But it's kind of like, it's been in recent years, like, outshone by other films. And I don't know, I've never understood why.
Yeah, I mean, with all respect to Spotlight, which won Best Picture for content, I just look at things like Spotlight, I look at things like The Post, and, like, that is a lavish love letter to this movie. It's so perfect for that, right? It's just a lavish love letter. I just fundamentally don't get how people don't watch this and be hooked by it so immediately. I think that was and you know, you and Cam and your amazing Total Reboot that have gone for so many years. Mm. Like, it's like you guys get, you know, going to different seasons and different moods. And after One Heat Minute, a lot of folks don't know, but this is a movie that I watched continuously. It was like my background noise in the background when I was doing other things. And I just, then you just start to see, wait a minute, this is perfect. Like, there's not a bad scene, and there's not a bad performance, and there's not a, not an unmemorable moment. There's not a, any choices that feel lazy. Everything feels really effective and deliberate. And particularly in this sequence, like for a movie, like I know you and I have both experienced movies, like they won't shut up. Like they just won't stop talking and giving me exposition. But this is a guy that's like grinding through conversations. We're imagining all these people he's talking to, what they look like. And it's just wonderful. And it's like a movie that does all the things basically you shouldn't be allowed to do.
Absolutely. And I think rewatching it again, because I've watched this movie many, many times, but I've rewatched it again the last couple of years with purpose each time. And with the purpose of watching it again to discuss it with you, what kind of shocked me this time or was the most pleasant surprise is how weird this movie is.
Yes.
Because, you know, in your memory, the way that this movie exists, it exists as like this this kind of perfect capturing of like the procedural, of the elements of journalism, of the elements of investigation. And that's kind of where it lives. People know it as that film. But then watching it again, I'm like, this movie is really weird, the way how formally it's made and like how like just even the cinematography is, you would never expect it to look like this, because it's like these really long shots, but then there's jump cuts and stuff. But it's also like the it's one of my favorite film techniques, the split diopter.
Split diopter is beautiful.
It's my, maybe.
Explain it for someone who's listening who may not know what we're talking about.
So split diopter is in the most basic terms, the way the camera works is like an eye, and the way that it captures things is through focus. So the way that you'll either be looking at something in the foreground will be in focus. Like, for example, you've got Robert Redford and he's like on the phone in this scene. And traditionally, like he would be in the foreground and the focus would be on him, which would mean that the image of him closest to us is very clear. And that's what we're looking at. And then the background of whatever's behind him is out of focus or blurry.
Yes.
But a split diopter is like it's used in lots of films, and it's always used as like this show off technique. Yes. Brian De Palma is one of my favorite filmmakers, and he uses it a lot in like all his films. He's a king of it.
Loves it.
He is the king of it. Like, he's in every single one of his movies.
And it's the more egregious of like violence and faces and absolutely sex and like bodies and tension are all created in split diopters and multiple bits of performance happening in focus.
And lots of like elements going on at the same time. And then I've never thought of this movie as being that, but then like every shot in this movie is basically split diopter, where what that is you've got two, like basically a lens cut in half.
Yes.
That's kind of working on the camera so that two things, both background and foreground, can be in focus. And the way that it looks on the screen is that there's almost like this slight blur down the middle where it's like in between the two lenses, but it allows things to be in focus in the foreground and something in the background to be in focus as well, but not to be like an infinite focus where everything's just in focus. No. So I know I've said the word focus 1,000 times in the last minute, but I'm trying to explain
all the president's focus.
All the president's focus. Dude, we've got to do one focus minute. Margot Robbie, Will Smith together.
Hey. Don't you be playing.
Dude, we're going to do it. We're going to absolutely do it.
The focus, deeply underrated. The last time Will Smith will ever be sexy. Okay? It's over.
Sorry, man. Sorry, Will.
It's done.
But I think that's what surprised me on this is like, that's such a weird thing to be doing, especially because there's no overt purpose to it in the film, except it's so much about this film is like what's going on in the background.
Yeah.
And it's just a way to kind of like allow these themes of like there's so many stories happening at once and so many different perspectives.
This is not the especially at the minute, the precise minute that we're doing, which if you're dialing it up because we're about to watch together, is 17 minutes on your dial up to 18. It's about, we are just grabbing at the tendrils of something. We are, and I think you used it so perfectly when you're talking about Finding Drago. It was like there was a thread on a Wikipedia entry that dove yourself and Cam down that crazy thing. And Cam very aptly said to you that you're the only person who was pulling on that thread in the world, which I think we can is fair to say that you weren't now after the show.
After the show's happened.
But it's that right now in the context of this film and in the context of this story, they're pulling at something that, like, it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's curious. It's scratching. It's creating an itch that must be scratched to satiate you. But right now, there are so many other things going on in the world.
Yeah. And I think it's so, the comparison between this and Finding Drago, it is it is apt, because that was the last time I watched this movie, was like when we were like developing Drago, developing the pilot. This was like the movie that I went back to. Like, it's more, the more overt like references for me, like putting the pitch together, putting the show together, were like the documentaries that I love, the investigative documentaries that like inspired me to want to make investigative media, or wanted to make films like that. Was like Catfish was huge for me, came out the year that I went to film school, and I was like, if I make a doco, it's going to be that. I'm going to make that. That's the kind of thing I want to make. And then Tickled, and those are the kind of things that we used. But then when I was like, oh, but now we have to tell like this longer extended story and to kind of like extrapolate comedy from it, even though, because the mystery that we're going for, if you haven't listened to Finding Drago, it's a mystery investigation podcast that me and my friend Cam James did, where it's a true documentary, like it's factual, it's a real documentary, it's all true, of us trying to track down this author of this unauthorized Rocky spin-off novel, who's like, and there's like this huge like Pulitzer Prize winning author behind it, and it's like his last great masterpiece, and it's like this lost Australian author. So it's us trying to track down this person and pulling out that thread. And so the way that we were going about it was like, oh, we have to make like a 6-7 episode miniseries. How can we track like comedy throughout it, and how can we track like the mystery throughout it? And this was the film that I went back to go like, also the film versions of the stuff that I like, the true documentary versions, they're all like one person mysteries. And I was like, the two person on investigation is like a classic thing. You've got like Holmes and Watson, but I'm like, what's two where it's like they're both in it? Like, what's like one where it's like they're in it together? I was like, it's All the President's Men, one of my favorite movies. So I went back to watch it to kind of like figure out their dynamic between Woodward and Bernstein.
And there was that moment where Cam told you that he was a Liberal Party.
Yeah.
Like in the Australian Young Liberals. At him in like episode 5. Yeah. Like, what?
That's not true. Cam's it's one of those things as well. Like, that's so true. Like, us thinking about it, or me thinking about it before, I'm like, oh, obviously, dynamically between Cameron and I, there is an element where we do look like the comedic version of Woodward and Bernstein, where it's like, yeah, we, you know, like I'm very Greek looking guy, chubby, got like Dustin Hoffman hair and stuff. And then Cam is like this very much Australian, all American looking kind of guy, Catholic guy. And so we're like,
haven't smoked nearly enough for you to live up to your Bernstein.
Like, well, you don't know. I had a dark past at one point before I became this sweetie of comedy. And I was like, oh, of course, Emily Bernstein, Cam's going to be Woodward. But then as I looked at her, I was like, oh, I'm Woodward. I'm not Bernstein. Where it's like, he's so invested in it. And that was the kind of dynamic that I was looking at doing this and creating, was like, Woodward is so in it. He's so like invested and swept up in it. Whereas Bernstein has like just that slight that outerness to it, where he's kind of from the outside looking in at like the mystery that's going on.
And Bernstein is about the story.
Yes.
And how resonant the story elements can be. And Woodward is about the story.
Woodward's about the story. And I think as well, because like he's that like young Republican guy. He's like, I've always voted Republican. When I was looking at Drago, I'm like, oh, I'm the nerd. I'm the one that's on the inside of the story. I'm the Woodward. I'm the Redford. I never thought I would be a Redford. I'm the Redford. And started getting amped about being Redford.
Well, in your ampedness about being Redford, let's pause. Mm-hmm. You guys are going to listen along. We're going to watch the minute now. The 18th minute of All the President's Men.
Oof, probably my favorite minute of the movie now.
A very powerful minute, ends on a cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to come back and talk about it more.
Heard of the wash? Do you speak English?
No, you're not English.
Momento. Hey, you guys speak English? Or any of you guys speak Spanish?
Señor, ¿con quién quiere hablar, por favor? Más
despacio. Señor.
Sí, sí, dígame.
Yo no
hablo inglés, señor. ¿Por qué no llama después?
Never mind. Cuando... Thank you. De nada.
Contéstele a la señorita. But,
thank you. Never mind.
Hello?
Mr. Bennett?
Yes?
This is Bob Woodward of the Washington Post. I'm sorry to bother you at home. I was wondering if we could confirm some information on one of your employees, Mr. Howard Hunt.
What kind of information?
It's just profile information, mostly. We know, for example, that he works for Mullen & Company, or did work for Mullen & Company, as a writer. He's also a novelist. We know that he works in the office of Mr. Charles Colson at the White House.
And the CIA.
And the CIA.
Well, if you're conducting that kind of an investigation...
Oof.
There it is.
Great minute.
Time passing is done so effortlessly. I love how you said about the weird formality of this movie and the formal techniques, but time passing is just so effortless. Mm. It's an undone button. It's like opening your eyes.
Like he's just been through 1,000 phone calls.
Like hours of this shit.
Yeah.
And the split diopter of the scene, so on the left-hand frame, mm-hmm. you got Redford's face. What's really cool, Redford actually left-handed, Bob Woodward right-handed.
Ooh. He went method?
He went method on the hands.
Wow.
It's the hand method.
Wow, the hand method. I've used the hand method many a time, but it means something else to me.
It does mean something else in certain regions.
For your overseas listeners.
On the right-hand side of frame, though, what's really cool, because we were explaining the split diopter, is that in this sequence, what continues to be highlighted is phones. Like, this is the machinery of this. It's the engine of this whole newspaper. Mm. There's mounds and mounds of, like, files and concertinas and old stuff. And this great moment is a couple of moments that he first calls Paul Herrera before scribbling him out.
Yeah.
And they keep in the flub. The flub is great. Any of you guys speak English? Fuck. Any of you guys speak Spanish? So good.
That
is more mistakes.
Truly my favorite part of the whole movie. And I couldn't believe when you loaded up the Blu-ray, I was like, this is my minute? I'm getting to talk about my favorite part of the whole movie.
It's great.
Because it's that flub that is so, it says so much about his character. It says so much about like the world that he's living in right now, the moment that he's in, where he's like made, clearly he's made thousands of phone calls about this. He's so in it. But because we're stuck in that stickiness of the procedure of journalism, of like uncovering things, of having to do the legwork, of having to do the research, of having to talk to so many people.
Yes.
And it's like this moment on the phone where it's like, how many times has he been doing this? And he's talking to someone that doesn't speak English, that only speaks Spanish. And he's asking for someone in the room that's full of people. Because you've got that split diopter, you can clearly see like so many people moving around the back behind the scenes.
And
here.
So many other people on phones themselves, on phones. Who are definitely not paying attention to what he's doing.
No one has any idea that this guy's breaking one of the, like, the three most important stories of the history of like modern journalism. And it's like that flub where he's like, does anyone speak English? Oh, does anyone speak Spanish? It's like the way that he's just like, no one's listening to him do it. And it's just like him correcting himself. And it's just because he's so in this like lonely mode, in this like singular mode where there's no one else, there's nothing else that matters apart from like moving on with this story, apart from the job at hand. And I think it's such a great character moment.
It's where, and you know this from like creating storytelling, whether it's on podcasts or comedies or film pitches, it's like that is a choice. So many times that edit is gone.
Absolutely.
And
especially a fast-paced movie like this where you're like, we need to move on to the next. This is not an important phone call. We need to move on to the next one, which is the important phone call in this minute. And it's like, but like, nope, this adds to the character. This adds to the moment. This adds to the feeling.
Yeah, and adds to that this guy's a sincere guy who occasionally makes fuck ups, and at the beginning of this film these guys make mistakes and they get better. Like they haven't, they're not the right now in 18 minutes of 138 minutes, you know, these guys are not the Woodward and Bernstein they become, and not the titans of like journalism that they become reputationally and continue to maintain. By the end, they're not those guys yet. What's so cool about this moment is like the editor Robert Wolf, he didn't do too many. He was editorial department of other movies, Getaway. Did a couple of Peckinpah movies in the editorial department of The Wild Bunch, most famously. But I love that Pacula is a director, and that editor goes, this is the best take.
Yeah.
Because this is me relating to this guy.
It's real.
Like, just that much more. Like, this is when he stops being Robert Redford and he is Bob Woodward.
Yes.
Like it's like that moment.
Yeah.
This in this moment, that's where it is.
This is his moment. This is what they play at the Oscars when he gets the it's flub. Him fucking up a line.
Hey, It's hand method and yeah. this, and that's all what it is.
This is acting, honey. Get used to it. This is where you got to watch it. This is where you learn it. And I think that it's like just beyond understanding the character, it's just like, I think it's this up all night aspect to it as yeah. well, where, you know, we're in like this office building, it's busy, but you have no sense of time
no.
of what's going on because there's no windows in this shot. It's just like this huge, like...
it's like they talk about casinos.
Yes,
like you don't,
exactly.
You don't know what time of day it is. And in this office with the same blinding, crazy fluorescence that yeah. like are over that whole room, you don't know that it's nighttime outside. They're nowhere near the windows, only like yeah. Bradley's office and stuff like that. But when you're in the middle, in the like the bullpen, so yeah. to speak, you're in the newsroom floor, you can't tell what time of day it is. And that even next adjustment of him just like opening his eyes going, okay, I need to keep having conversations.
Me and closing my eyes for 1 second was my sleep tonight. And now I have to wake back up again.
That's it. I'm gonna get into this. I'm just going to move my face around a little bit because I need to like regain composure.
Yeah.
And I've been just scribbling down notes. And then we get to the next phone call. Mr. Bennett. I just yearn, and I'm saying it now in the hopes that one day when there eventually maybe like a podcasting, like, you know, there's like a podcasting equivalent of Google
yeah.
where you just like, we can all have an office.
I'm
like,
yeah.
I don't want beanbags. I don't want ping pong yeah. tables. I want us all to dress in corduroy and to smoke and to work in an office that looks like
and
this.
And I want handheld phones. I want landlines on the table.
Landlines on the table.
And I want a dial on the phone.
I want knobs on all the TVs. I want them retrofit with knobs.
Exactly.
I want to tune UHF.
I want our TV and our phones to be rotaries. We have to spin the dial to get whatever we need. And it's this great moment where it's like he's slowly uncovering the information. And it's like, I love it because it's like the reveals in this scene and the reveal so much of this movie, it's about asking question, whether it's the right or wrong one,
yes.
the answer is important.
Yes.
And this one is like you're slowly seeing that information seep through. And I think that when we were making Drago, this honestly, one of the other reasons I have like the perfect moment, like we stole this scene. Like we were like, what can we do? What can we do? We like, there's a whole episode of Finding Drago that is this scene extrapolated inside out where we come to a loose end. And it was with our producer, Anna Bronowski, who's like one of my all-time heroes of documentary filmmaking, who made Forbidden Lies and the Pauline Hanson documentary.
We must commend her for having to watch footage of Pauline Hanson.
Yeah, she, over. Man, she's got some great stories about it.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and if you ever get to meet Anna Bronowski, ask about Pauline Hanson because she has great stories about
Anna, if you're listening.
Absolutely.
All the President's Minutes would like to talk to you about political fuckery.
You should absolutely get Anna Bronowski because she is like the best like investigative documentarian filmmaker in this country. I'll put you in contact with her. I've got her number.
We're doing it.
But it's like this, we extrapolated that from this scene where we're like, where we kind of got to this loose end with the investigation, like where do we go?
Yes.
And she made this suggestion that it was like, when you think of her, she's like truly like in this country, like someone that has a lot of stature as a documentary investigative filmmaker. So it would surprise a lot of people to know that a lot of the comedy ideas for Finding Drago would come from her because she genuinely is a very, very funny person, like a super, she could have been a comedian. She can do like amazing impressions and stuff like that. And she had the suggestion of like, you should get the phone book out and start calling noise in the phone book and in Australia, in Perth, in Melbourne, in all around Australia to see if that leads you anywhere. You never know if you'll find something.
Amazing.
And then we recalled this scene where I'm like, oh, it's so funny. And it's like this scene kind of informed like because so much of Drago is like this kind of globe-trotting journey, but we're stuck in a studio in Australia to record it. So much of that was through phone calls, through Skype calls and stuff like that. So it was kind of like this scene informed everything about that, of like how weird it is and like the weird little games you play. Like there's one that we kept our weird flub in, which is like one phone call I had to call in Perth the state library to find out if they had the book by him. And then at the end of the phone call, the person on the other end recognizes I have a Greek surname and then just starts speaking to me in Greek. And then I just have to talk back to her in Greek. And that was like, oh, that was my All the President's Men moment. It was like that's, what I was thinking. I was like, you. We got to lock that in.
That's when you were your most you in the silliness that you were creating.
Exactly. It was like, I went full Woodward, bro. I went all the way in.
Full hand method.
I've got the hand method going
Greek,
on.
Full Greek hand method.
I've got the Greek hand method, which is dirtier than you would think. But it's like, it is like this thing, because like, you know, we're comedians, like, you know, I study journalism, but I've never put my degree to use until making this podcast, where I was like, this is, the degree that I dropped out of twice, so I did get a full film degree, but I put that to use, but with like the journalism stuff, and so like, you know, for us going in, that was the aspect where like, okay, we know that we can kind of bring a story together, but how do we bring like the integrity to like the investigative aspects to it as well.
Yes.
That's not just us putting this story together. It's us doing the legwork, doing the groundwork, doing the interviews and stuff. And I was like, this truly was it. It was like, how do we do that through audio? And this is what taught us that.
And it's funny you say that, because like, I wonder, what is it like about this? It's not glamorized.
Not at all.
But what makes it so glamorous? Like, you just like, there's something about it that completely unglamorous. And I think you nailed it. It's like, When you think about grinding through something, and there's a lot of thankless turn after turn, and there can be that, and you've just got to sometimes push through.
Yeah.
It's that whole thing there, or it's not like a fitness or a sport metaphor. It's just like you have to be in the grind and literally keep just picking up that phone and keep following up leads and keep doing what you got to do, because there will eventually be a breakthrough. But there's this moment in this movie where it's like I keep watching this, and in this scene, it's so, I don't know, it's like aspirational always.
I think it's that aspirational thing is exactly what it is. Because it's like that really, it's like that almost hacky film writing technique. And Will Goldman is not a hack at all. He's one of the all-time greats, because he invented all that stuff. And he's written about all that stuff as well. But it's like that thing was like, how do you make someone likable? How do you like a character in a film? It's like that save the cat thing. But it's one of the ones that they teach you, they really harangue into at film school, is like, oh, to show someone be good at what they do.
Yes.
And I think this movie so much is about seeing these two guys that have the chance to be good at what they do. And then you've got the aspirational thing of like, holy shit, you're seeing them become like the best at what they do throughout the entire film.
Yes.
And I think that moments like this is like where it happens, where it's like, you know, journalism is not a perfect art. It's not like an RPG game where you select the exact right thing to say that's going to reveal the best part of the story, that's going to reveal what you need. It's this imperfect craft where you extrapolate the answers from what is either being withheld, the way that's being withheld, or what is being told to you. It's all about like that, you know, not duplicitous nature, but like the idea.
People are always painting themselves into the hero
version
of that story.
And I think this film plays so well with like what conversations are, the ideas of conversations, how to either win a conversation or what to get out of them, that is so important to that investigative nature of journalism.
The first film we're going to prescribe at the podcasting school that will eventually be open of
big
like,
time.
Like how to get a conversation. I love what you said before around, you know, someone being good. But it's also, he's getting good. And the comedic moment here, and what kind of makes you sort of smile is when the guy, Bennett, who he's speaking to on the phone says, and you know, the Howard works at the CIA. And Redford's great turn of, and the CIA.
Like,
and
pretending that he like knows.
Sort of like he knows. And the other guy on the other end of the phone, which gets cut off at the end of our minute, says, well, of course, if you know that he works for Coulson, you know that he works in the CIA.
Yeah.
And sort of that person on the other end of the phone is going, I know you don't know that you literally just learned from me 2 seconds ago that he was in the CIA. This is where we're at.
Yeah. We're at this high level. We're going towards.
That's, again, just that other like repeating that revelatory thing to sort of try and keep the flow of the conversation. And it's imperfect.
Yeah. And it's a moment where the film very slowly and very subtly, like, takes it up an entire notch. Where, yes, like, this, there's a clandestine nature to everything that's going on. And it's just like, it's like just such a, like, if you were watching this in the background, you would miss this moment for, yes, sure.
For sure.
As well,
in,
like,
in the world of two screens, you're missing this.
Exactly. And this is a world of two screens. We've got two open right now watching this movie.
I think there might be three.
There might be three or four. But it's, as well, it's like, that's another formal thing about this movie that's so strange. Like, in my head, I'm like, oh, yeah, I know the score to this movie. I know, yeah, what the score of this film is. I know the theme of it. And I think it has a great score. But then I'm watching it again. I'm going like, wait, is there a score to this film?
Yeah.
In moments like this as well, where it's like, you know, in the post, perhaps this moment would be, have like a, some strings under it, or like something to kind of build up that tension, going like, we've learned something new. But here it's all about the acting. It's all about the moments, all about the pacing, and it's all about the conversation. There's nothing, there's no sound getting in the way of the conversation in these movies. There's like background noise of like other typewriters going off and phones and other cool retro tech. But there's nothing that gets in the way of the conversations. That's all about listening to them and hanging on every word that they say.
Yeah, and it's, I think that you've just nailed it, which is...
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's it, guys. That's the show.
That was the last minute.
The last minute, we're finished. No, I just mean nailed it as in, it makes you lean forward, because it's
absolutely
it takes away the two shot. And like you would know from film school, it's like if you're having a phone conversation where possible, you want to see the other person.
Yeah.
It's
you're snapping like, back and forth.
There's a snap back and forth. You're emulating a two shot of two people sitting in front of each other, and to not have it, it's a withholding mechanism, usually for like mysterious characters or something like that. And it's like,
it's like Scream does it very well, where you're only seeing one half of the conversation.
Yeah, and Scream very effectively, it's like for later on reveals, and Matthew Lillard has a face for a phone call.
Yeah.
But
spoilers for Scream.
How many years ago? 96. Yeah.
It's Christ. Like 3 decades old.
Oh my god, that's really scary. But yeah, so it's just one of those things where you do it, but In this film, it's like, we're going to use a technique that is absolutely, you know, a horror movie technique, and it's absolutely a withholding technique for a thriller. But it's, no, you're just calling someone, and your experience is, you are anchored to this desk, like you're chained here doing time. You're hanging on to the words, you're trying to make sense of it. Your notes are ultimately scribbled and doodled, and like, they're just all over the place.
Yep.
But sometimes you get a clanger that this guy actually works for the CIA.
Yeah. Oof. It's so good. This is such a good movie.
It is a very good movie.
Yeah.
There are so, and like, and with all respect to the post, because it's just Spielberg doing, it's him expressing a kind of story in the way that he tells stories like this.
And it's interesting as well, like it's weird to think how formally different those films are, because I remember seeing the post and I really liked it. I think we reviewed it on our old podcast, to like Cam and I, ages ago, and comparing it to this film was really interesting, because
it's almost unfair.
It's unfair because even though Spielberg's like the great master, it's interesting to see the stylistic differences, because Spielberg is someone that you never associate as like a one-shot director. But Spielberg, so much of his tension is that he shoots one wide and the whole conversation is one wide shot. Like in that film, there's so many conversations between Ben Bradley, played by Tom Hanks this time, and Meryl Streep, and they're talking to each other, and it's just like one wide shot where you're seeing them both just in camera talking, and there's no cutting, there's no editing, and that's where the tension comes from. Like Spielberg brings so much of his tension and pacing through performance, and just by them talking, it sets the pace of the tone of the film, and without editing. And watching this one, it's like the jump cuts are so essential to like creating the pacing and this feeling of being on edge and that unease of it, and creating that like really exciting, unpredictable tone to this film as well.
And it's also stillness when you're in isolation. Mm-hmm. Like I think that's what builds the tension. So here Pacula's like, I'm gonna do this. It's gonna be a really tense scene.
Yep.
You're not gonna realize it's a tense scene until we drop a bomb like this on you, because we've been grinding through this dissemination of information, gathering little bits and pieces and little more tendrils, more and more threads until we get to this bang. This is actually what you're hooked into. But with Spielberg, it's like, he's such a fan of John Ford. Like, yeah. I hate to go back to John Ford. But it's like, he's such a John. Like, if you watch, you know, any of John Ford's movies, but like, I often think of the beginning of The Searchers because it's probably my favorite John Ford film. So yeah. I always reference that. It's like,
and that first shot is like, you could draw it from your memory right now. It's like that incredible.
And when they're there and Ethan, John Wayne's character, goes in to visit his brother's homestead, and there are multiple characters in the frame all talking. Yeah. That's a Spielbergian shot. He's got like a mid. He loves a John Ford mid shot for things to happen and for things to reverberate around the scene. Whereas like the more tense parts of the post is like a couple of moments where I think it's there's someone carrying like he's got the Panama Papers on a plane in the seat next to them, and it's a big camera move into them and then into the seat, as opposed to like watching someone sit there agonizing, sort of ordering a drink from an air hostess and looking down and then sort of like inferring a box, you know, like it's not taking as much time. It's like doing something quite dramatic.
Yeah.
But that's just, I don't know. It's like a stylistic flex. I don't know what it is. It's like, it's like that AI, like artificial intelligence. It's like a script written by Kubrick and made by Spielberg. And it's this weird marriage of like, it's not either. It's almost not either of them.
It's not either of them. And it's weird. Like, I recently rewatched that movie and like, when I was like, this always stood out to me as something that's so strange.
Yeah.
And then knowing that those two were good friends, I'm like, they're such different filmmakers.
Such different people.
Such different people, where like Spielberg is so warm and he's so sentimental, and his films like create such like this really like this absolute warmth within you, where you feel like this very fond emotional connection to his films almost straight away.
Yes.
And then Kubrick is like the opposite of every adjective I just used to describe him. Just look up the antonym and then apply them yourself. And it's like that movie, it's like to find out that the most of the sentimental stuff comes from Kubrick, and then Spielberg has to like, Spielberg's bringing them back. So it's like, oh, so it does feel more Kubrickian and stuff. It's such a strange movie. And I think The Post stands out as like this, really, I liked it a lot when it came out, but it stands out as like this strange little entity on his filmography, where it almost doesn't make sense that he's paying homage to, like, in this weird like meta cinematic universe, the way that movie ends to this one.
Yeah, it loves this movie.
It's like Rogue One to this movie. Like, you can literally flip on this at the
That reference to Rogue One in the context of this podcast works.
It does. Like, it is Rogue One. The way it ends at the same point.
Yes.
It's them like scrambling to get that message.
That's like the Darth Vader lightsaber scene in Rogue One. God, just for a quick digression, that movie sucks. It sucks.
Oh, my God. I'm on the record. It's my least favorite Star Wars movie easily.
Rise of Skywalker is...
Oh, I forgot that. Dude, brutal. I forgot that existed. I've seen it twice and I forgot it existed.
Well, that's where we are. But I think that moment that leading in.
Yeah.
But it's really funny that these are both in that same universe.
Yeah.
And it has some unsentimental moments too, but it's in this one, I think it's got some forthright moments, but it's just, it's like the aesthetic, everything about the aesthetic here, even though it makes really key formal choices in The Post, just that Spielberg cinematographer, I'm going to get his name
right. Janusz Kaminski.
The Kaminski method.
Whoa, the Kaminski method. Whoa.
Whoa.
It all led to us saying the Kaminski method.
That's another t-shirt. We've now recorded two podcasts together.
There we go.
The Kaminski method, but it's just Janusz Kaminski.
Exactly. It's Janusz Kaminski and then Spielberg in the same poster as the iconic Kaminski method Netflix show of Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, that is good shit to get the Kaminski method.
That's good.
But it's like, I think that this movie is so about using style to enhance the substance, to bring like stuff that is in the background to the foreground, literally with split dioptic, to literally bring stuff into the background into focus, where it's like in this scene it's the phones, in so many other scenes it's a TV, it's paper. And I think like watching it on this rewatch, I know this isn't, I'm stepping out of my minute here, I'm so sorry, I'm stepping out of my minute, but it's
okay, you can break the rules.
I'm breaking the rule, but like, you know, those TVs are on and they're telling a different side of the story. They're all like, the TV, the TV journalism was like pro-Nixon shit. And it's like stuff that I never noticed until watching it
and
this time.
And you're watching it now and you're like, wow, like they are, it's like, and for very specifically Australian listeners, it's like you look at someone like ABC or Four Corners or some of our independent journalists and they are so on the cutting edge, like really sticking it to some of their political leaders and their fuckery. And then you'll watch a very hegemonic, like just completely vanilla neutered thing like our morning shows, name them, whatever they are, whichever the ones,
Studio 10
or any of those terrible shows, and they feel like they're just in another time zone.
Exactly.
Like they don't even exist.
Like right now, we're probably a few months removed from like, actually it's probably never ending. It's probably still happening when this is released. But like the bushfire stuff where our Prime Minister Scott Morrison has been like accused of being like totally not a human basically.
Yes.
The guy's not a human. The guy has zero empathy. He went through empathy training and it failed. The guy's a freaking replicant or something. And like all this bizarre stuff. And there was like this great clip that went viral of like some conservative commentators like going, he's the best prime minister we've ever had. And then Gretel Colleen, who's like a comedian in this country and like TV show host, but and an author, very educated and smart person, just becoming like, just going like, are you insane? And just going like, you're insane to think that, and like going crazy. And it's like, that's so much of like, you know, this idea of like these multiple conflicting perspectives out there. And then to look back at this, 1976 is one of my big Oscar years for me.
Huge
you've year. Got this, you've got Rocky, you've got Taxi Driver, all my favorite movies. And then another one of my favorites that is so much about this from the other side, it's Network as well, which is very comparable to this film.
Network is an amazing film.
And I almost, and like that's a movie about the way that TV media kind of shapes us and shapes the conversation and like how information and misinformation kind of go out there. And I think that watching this again with the context of that going like, I actually think that this is almost more a slyer and more blistering takedown of what TV media actually was like and what TV media like can, like the brainwashing effect of it can actually be, because it's like this comparison, this slow comparison where it's like it's the second movie in this, and if you're not watching it, you don't see it at all,
and you don't need to see it on those first watches, but
not
when you go back and watch it again, you're like, they're in a different time zone, they're behind. And then sometimes there's these quick moments where the TV catches up and there's an awakening, and they're like, did you know
have that you felt it? Force Awakens.
There has been way too much Star Wars on this. It's okay.
It's okay. We can edit them out.
One more and it's going. We're not going to get any better than the Kaminsky Method, though.
No. Kaminsky Method's it.
That's totally it. But yeah, no, it's just... And now, like, in 2020, it's just a shock to think that, you know, the engine of that information and that TV stuff, like, what's scary is it's the same.
Yeah, it's totally the same.
Except there are different TV channels, you know, with more bespoke things, and there are different media outlets, but it's like, you know, great satirists who've even been on the show, like Mark Humphries.
Yeah.
Like, they live for how far behind other TV is to the news, like to the cycle, to the sentiment.
Yeah.
And it's just massaging all these feelings of discontent, and these guys are like in there on the grind, things are happening, things are grinding through.
Oof, beautifully put.
Well, I genuinely think we're not going to get any better than the Kaminsky Method.
The Kaminsky Method, we can end the podcast.
And the post is the Rogue One.
Yeah.
To all the presidents, man. Yeah. Look, Alexi Toliopoulos, you're amazing.
You're amazing.
Thank you so much for being a part of this show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I almost wish that we'd intersected for One Heat Minute around the time of Finding Drago, just because we were on a few lovely lists together.
Exactly.
It's really nice to get a bit of recognition for some tireless and passionate, crazy work.
Yeah, we're going to be inextricably linked forever in the podcasting world.
In the podcasting world, it was great. Mate, tell people where they can find you. I will obviously do it at the end of the show, but give yourself a shout out for all the other
fabulous
great stuff.
Yeah, well, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at This Is Alexi. But I've got heaps of podcasts as well. We've got Total Reboot, where we talk about film, cinema, reboots, remakes, and ripoffs in cinema. It's me and Cameron James, my comedic life partner, where we both love movies. We both talk movies so much. We're also comedians, so we invented talking about them with a humorous take, if you will. And also the podcast that we talked about heaps on this, Finding Drago. It's a podcast, limited mini-series podcast that we made for the ABC that is a factual documentary, investigative documentary, highly acclaimed. I'm now put on my CV, literally internationally acclaimed investigative documentarian, Alexi Toliopoulos. But it's an investigative documentary, also a comedy about us trying to track down the author of a Rocky IV spin-off novel about Ivan Drago, the villain from Rocky IV. And we're on the same list of like best of the decade and stuff like that. Many of the same lists of like great podcasts. So if you like this, check it out. If you like All the President's Men, check it out. And I would love to hear what you actually think of it. if you love All the President's Men and like Finding Drago, I want to hear about it.
It will be linked in the description. And now that One Heat Minute and Finding Drago mm-hmm. are linked, I think the 18th minute of All the President's Minutes is going to be intrinsically linked to Finding Drago forever.
I think so.
Thanks for being a part of the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
That incredibly talented and hilarious individual is Alexi Toliopoulos. You can find him on Twitter at This Is Alexi, A-L-E-X-E-I. Go straight now to your favorite podcasting app. Get Finding Drago, get Mic Check Pod, and get Total Reboot Pod. All phenomenal podcasts with he and Cameron James. Such good fun. Thank you so much again for listening to All the President's Minutes and anything on the One Heat Minute Productions feed. I'm your host, Blake Howard, and producer of Increment Vice, as well as everything that's been happening on the One Heat Minute Productions feed. If you want to follow me, simply go to @OneBlakeMinute on Instagram and on Twitter, or to OneHeatMinute.com to find out everything that's happening with the show and about the show. If you guys want to support us, we have a link on OneHeatMinute.com to our Patreon. If you can spare even a couple of bucks a month, the cost of a coffee a month, you are going to be contributing to this show, the amazing Increment Vice, and any other amazing shows that are a part of One Heat Minute Productions. Thank you so much in advance. If you can't support us, you don't have the cash, that's totally fine, but please subscribe, rate, review, and share the shows. We would love, if you are digging the show, share them with like-minded film folk around the place. Thank you so much once again for listening to this episode. We'll catch you on another episode of All the President's Minutes and another episode in the One Heat Minute Productions feed. Very soon.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.